Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth clothing for all kinds of weather, all kinds of terrain, all kinds of budgets. It's clothing that just works. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. Got to give a quick shout out to Patreon and host of the Generations to Hunt podcast, Joe Davis. He's had a pretty rough season. He's out in the late season with his recurve and was able to take down a doe. Super pumped for Joe. Can't wait to do that myself. Congratulations again. Good job, Joe. This is going to be the last week for you guys to sign up for Patreon to get in on any of the Q4 giveaways from our great partners at Huntworth, Latitude, Lucky Buck, Spartan Forge, Genesis 3D, Kanadi, Zinger, and Big Shot Targets. Genesis 3D just came up with a code just for Patreons. So if you're looking at getting some things that you didn't get in your stocking and you want to save some coin on that, you can sign up for Patreon, and he's got a code specifically for that. Check him out at genesis3d.com. Big Shot Targets, they wanted me to remind you. So if your club or your archery shop is looking for any new targets, at ATA, they're going to have a bunch of the Ironman 48s and a couple of the Vegas 600s on sale, looking to move. So they'd be great for your club, your shop, or maybe one of the lanes in your basement. If you got a big place, definitely want to check those out. Go on to bigshottargets.com and, you know, you can save some money with code BCP. You can save 10% over there at Big Shot. But all of our partners give away something every quarter, not just to us. We're giving back, and our Patreons are the lifeblood of this podcast. We're creating a great community through Marco Polo. You can check that out at patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, or you can just click on the link on our website or Instagram. But this podcast is again about building that community through giving back to veterans. The hunting industry, people that hunt, I think, have the biggest hearts and are so empathetic to veterans and first responders. And Andrew here is no different with the outdoor driven nonprofit, getting veterans out there, saving lives, affecting people, changing lives. You guys are going to love this podcast. Pretty heartfelt. And as always, thanks for listening. All right, everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, and coming at you with a little bit different take today. We got Andrew Cumptus here with Outdoor Driven, talking about his nonprofit. I know a lot of people out there that listen to the podcast, a lot of our Patreons are all veterans. It seems like, you know, that's one thing for hunters in the outdoors is like, there's nobody that doesn't have a soft spot for veterans. And I don't see, he didn't come on here eating crayons. Maybe he just finished it up, but he is a fellow Marine. You know, that's where we get a bad rap. Like we couldn't possibly, have any brains in our head to do, kind of what we signed up to do. But, I'll give you this. I've had enough conversations with him. He is a jarhead and,
true, yeah. True.
So, how's everything for you? How's everything going, Andrew?
Oh, it's good. You know, we had to, take all the crayons and put them into my daughter's little plastic cases and stuff. You know, there's a child safety lock on them. Sometimes I struggle trying to open it, you know, in case I want a snack. So,
yeah. And, you know, Christmas is a big time for, you know, those 64 packs of crayons. Like it can get tough to resist.
It's gotta be the Crayola brand. I mean, that off brand stuff, I can't have that anymore. So,
yeah. So Andrew, like, let's go from like a hunting side of this. So like as a kid growing up, did you grow up hunting? Was that like a big part of your life, you know, before you joined the Marine Corps?
So, I mean, like most kids, you know, you get to that age and you're like, hey, I want a BB gun. And lo and behold, I have my old Red Ryder and, you know, I was shooting tons of pop cans and beer cans with it. And, you know, occasionally I would be outside and, you know, I would shoot at a bird or something like that that was flying by. And, you know, my dad always tried to yell at me. He's like, oh, if you kill it, you eat it. My dad didn't really, wasn't really a big hunter, growing up. My grandpa, but his dad passed away, while my dad was at a very, very young age. And, you know, my grandpa was really big into upland bird hunting. And my dad just never really kind of took that torch on with it. But he was big into the outdoors in general, really heavy with Boy Scouts. And he got me into the outdoors at a very young age, just, you know, camping, hiking, just survival stuff. And it wasn't until when my cousin, when she got married, her husband, he came and was like, hey, how old are you? I'm like 11. Well, I was 10. I think I was 10 at the time. And he's like, you into hunting? I said, no. And he's like, well, do you want to? I can get, you know, so I was like, sure. And I sign up for hunter safety and then went to a yard sale, picked up, I can't even tell what the brand. It was, you know, I think it was like a $20 bow. It had three pins on it. I mean, you know, the aluminum shaft arrows. So, I mean, this was a garage sale bow. That was my first bow I ever had. And I got into deer hunting when I was 12 years old. And it's kind of crazy when I look back at that because, I never had any hunting experience and my cousin just told me, yep, get up in the tree stand, sit there, don't talk, be quiet. And I'm thinking like, okay, he's going to take me out and, you know, be next to me or something like that. No, I hit the ground running. He was like, there's a tree. And I looked at him and he's like, climb up the tree, put your safety harness on, bring your bow up. Put your arrow in, clip in your release, and wait. I'm like, okay. So I did all that. I had the arrow knocked. I had, you know, my release clipped in, and I'm sitting up there. And I was wearing just an old pair of my dad's. You know, my dad was, you know, he was in the Navy, but then joined the National Guard. So I had some of his old Army fatigues. And I'm out there freezing my butt off because all I had on was like a sweatpants and a sweatshirt with those fatigues on over top of it. 12-year-old sitting up in a tree stand by myself, just shaking just because of how cold it was. I'm like, what we're having right now in Michigan. But that kind of is what started my hunting. Like I said, 12 years old, I didn't kill my first deer until I was 14. Opening day of rifle season, you know, because back then you had to be 14 to legally hunt with a rifle. And I had some does that came running by and, you know, back when, you know, we could bait. But again, it was how I was raised and I didn't start changing up my style of hunting, which I'm sure we'll get into later, You know, Michigan, hey, we hunted over bait. You know, I never was really taught how to do the scouting part until I got older. But this deer stopped and I had a single shot, 243. I picked it up, put it right through the window and crosshairs right on the, you know, the bed box. And I pulled the trigger, took off running, ran about, say maybe 40 yards. And I saw it keel over. And I remember walking on, my heart's pounding. And as I'm walking up to what I thought was a doe, it's getting smaller and smaller. Smaller, and then I get up to it and there's these nice little bumps on top of its head. So my first ever deer was unfortunately was a button buck, but you know, as a 14-year-old kid, I mean, I was on cloud nine. I mean, I killed my first deer, and you know, that kind of got the rest of my career set for, you know, deer hunting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just having this conversation with my wife about, like, you know, I took my daughter out this year. She's been hunting a couple times, but this was the first year she was behind the gun, and she ended up killing a spike, and really cool experience. You know, got to video the whole thing. And my wife was asking me about, like, my first, you know, hunting experiences. And it was pretty similar to, like, what you just outlined there with the, you know, just I had no sticks or anything. There was maybe I had a couple, like, screw in steps and, like, climbed up a tree, hung my tree stand. And I don't know if you were of the age, but the safety harnesses used to just be a belt. So it was like a loop that went around the tree, just went around your waist. Yep.
Put your arms up like this. You fall
right there. Yep. And, you know, my first deer hunt, I actually missed a deer maybe twice. I know I missed at least once, straight down, but then with a rifle, 14 years old, same thing. But my dad just said, sit here on the ground, like, just sit here. And, I ended up shooting a spike that was, I mean, I think you could have tagged it with a doe permit. Like, it was but they were bone, you know, little tiny ones. And, you know, then that night I ended up shooting a doe. But same thing, you know, there was nobody there telling me to, you know, wait or be quiet or, like, this is gonna be a good shot. It's just like, here you go, stay here. It's just different. And I think, you know, the way that it is today with the youth hunt and being able to, you know, as much as I don't like, you know, some of the things around the youth hunt where, you know, dad does all the work and the kids just sit out there and shoot a 140. And it changes their perspective maybe. But the mentoring aspect of it, I think, is a lot, it's almost required, in some degree, because, you know, my daughter, as much as she spent time in the woods, like, she couldn't go out there and find anything herself or do anything. So, you know, being around it, she kind of has to take something away from it. And so, from there, from 14 to when you went into the Marine Corps, like, were you hunting every year? Was it, like, become like a passion of yours? Or was it kind of like the Michigan thing where it was just like, it's November 15th, it's a holiday, we go out for opening weekend and then come back?
No. So I actually never had a deer camp. My cousin, she was married. I still call him my cousin because, you know, he's family to me. And he, you know, he lived in Beaverton, Michigan, and, you know, from Bay City to Beaverton, you know, 45-minute drive. So weekends I would go out, you know, I was October 1st, I was always up in a tree stand somewhere. And November 15th, you know, if I didn't kill anything with my bow, which I never did until I got a little bit more older, but No, I deer hunted, you know, every year. You know, I always started off with my bow and then transitioned to the rifle. And then, you know, if nothing happened then, you know, muzzle loader. I also got into waterfowl hunting, and that's a huge passion of mine too. Had a couple friends, you know, when I was, you know, same thing, young age, you know, their dad was a big waterfowl hunter. So they would take us out and stuff. And so, I mean, I just, you know, I got bit by the outdoor bug, and, you know, it just kept growing. And I wanted to learn more. And just as I started to kind of understand the concept of, you know, what the rut is and, you know, the scouting aspect, because that's what my cousin, he would put me up in a tree stand, and, you know, then eventually he's like, all right, well, go hang a tree stand. And I'm like, I don't know where to put it. And so he would kind of like show me some things, but, you know, we always have a saying in the Marine Corps, and I'm sure other branches have it too, you know, pain retains. You know, if you do something and it hurts, like, hey, fire, you touch it, burn your finger, ah, that's hot. Okay, well, you're going to retain that, you know, it's the same concept. And, you know, I was hunting a tree stand, and he said, well, that's a bad spot for the wind for today to hunt that. I'm like, what do you mean the wind? I mean, you know, there's so much that I didn't learn. And, you know, I kind of feel like I missed out on a lot of awesome hunting opportunities because of the knowledge that I didn't have. But then that ultimately falls back on myself for not taking those steps. And when I started to ask him the questions, he's like, man, it only took you 5 years to finally ask me how to do this stuff. I'm like, oh, geez, okay, you know. But deer, duck, and stuff until I, you know, joined the Marine Corps, which that led up to 2005 when I actually enlisted into the United States Marine Corps.
And so what was that decision for you? And then what was like your MOS and your journey in the Marines?
The decision to join?
Well, yeah. So the decision to join, and then like, did your score dictate like your MOS, or were you like me and you were like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I scored a 99 on the ASVAB. Like, I want to be infantry. Like, I think I would really like to do that.
Yeah. So, I always joke and say this, like, our family, we're like the Lieutenant Dans of the world, you know, not that, you know, in every war we died in, but, you can trace our family, you know, lineage back to the French and Indian War. We were French voyageurs back then, and we actually fought in the French and Indian War. I mean, my cousin did a big research thing. So, I mean, we fought in almost every major war that the United States was in. So it was just kind of like, I think like a genetic thing. Like, I mean, my first memories, you can see photos of me as a kid, and I'm wearing, you know, my dad's, or wearing a camouflage uniform saying I'm going to be a soldier. So like my family knew at a very young age that, you know, I was going to be joining the military, and it was just a matter of picking the branch. And, you know, I've said this before on another podcast, I was originally wanted to be a Navy SEAL, but I would join the Navy Sea Cadets. I went to this 2-week little buds course, and this one instructor there was like, hey, mentally, physically, I know you can handle it. He's like, there's no doubt in my mind, but what's your plan B? And I'm like, what do you mean? But what if you get hurt, you know, and you get recycled back? What are you going to do? You know, do you want to be stuck on a ship? And I'm like, I really thought of that. So when I came home, I was, you know, going in to go talk to the Navy recruiter. And as I was walking in, he was out for lunch or something. And just like good old recruiters, you know, the guy pops his head out in the hallway. Hey, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm here to talk to him. He's like, for what? I'm like, oh, you know. And then he's like, well, what are you trying to do? I'm like, Navy SEAL. He's like, you ever heard of Marine Recon? I'm like, what's that? And here it is, you know, cast out that line. And I'm like, you know, biting onto the hook. And he reeled me into his office, and we sat down and started talking. And he, you know, told me about Marine Force Recon. And, you know, he's like, hey, you know, if something happens and you can't make it, well, you can still be infantry. I'm like, all right, cool, you know. So I went and took my ASVAB, which, you know, I just, whatever, it's an ASVAB, I don't care, you know, just, you know, get it done, get me out of here, it's a stupid test. And didn't realize that it actually meant what jobs you could get. And my first GT score wasn't high enough to actually go recon, so I ended up 0331, became a machine gunner. And I was a machine gunner for about 2 years. Two deployments. I was deployed a total of 7 times. I did 3 tours in Iraq, 2 in Afghanistan, and 2 on Navy ships. And after my second deployment, I was talking with a couple of guys in a scout sniper platoon, and they said, hey, we got an indoc, you should try out. And, you know, I said, well, my GT score is not high enough to go to school. And they're like, oh, dude, there's waivers for everything. So I ended up joining platoon. I mean, past the indoc. Back then we could say indoc, you know, now it's considered verbal hazing, so it was a screener. So past the indoc, made it to the platoon, trained with them, deployed to Iraq as a pig. You know, that's what they called all the non-hogs. So professionally instructed gunmen is what a pig stands for. And then the term hog stands for hunter of gunmen. I can get into a lot more of the history with that, but came back from that deployment, went to school, graduated the Scout Sniper Basic course, became a team leader, and I finished out my career in the Marine Corps as a Marine Scout Sniper, and I took a lot of pride in that. And ultimately, that is kind of what led me really heavy back into archery hunting. So I joined in 2005, and I got forced out in 2018. I had service limitations after 13 years. I got an NJP back in 2008, but most good Marines did get in trouble. I see all these staff NCLs. Oh, I got two of them. You're fine. Well, I wasn't fine because the Marine Corps that black eyed my record, and it didn't matter. Honor graduates out of I don't know how many schools. I mean, letters of recommendation. I mean, I got a sheet that is like a mile long of great accomplishments I had in my career, but the thing that kind of boiled down to was I apparently deployed too many times. My 7 deployments, I didn't do a B billet. I didn't, do what the Marine Corps wanted. I just kept deploying. So once I got honorably, discharged from the Marine Corps, my life hit rock bottom. And I guess this is kind of going to lead into where I think this is going to go. But I had in 2006, I was blown up in, with our Humvee. And I suffered a traumatic brain injury. And after I got out, between that having PTSD and the wife, we dealt with 7 miscarriages that led to the birth of our daughter. I mean, my life, I hit rock bottom like hard. And I was substance abused with alcohol. And it wasn't until one day I just decided that, I'm going to go hunt. I went and bought my deer tag. Shot my bow a couple dozen times, like, I'm dialed in, let's go. Grabbed it, went out there, and went out and sat in this tree stand that, I started to kind of learn a little bit about scouting, through YouTube videos and just talking to my friends. So I went out, scouted in an area, found a pretty good deer trail, set up my bow, set up my tree stand, and I was sitting there. And all of a sudden I look and I can see a doe walking down this trail, and my heart starts racing. I'm like, man, this is awesome. Like, I'm gonna fling an arrow at her. And I was getting all amped up, and as she's walking, all of a sudden it was like the world stopped spinning. Everything got super quiet besides my tinnitus.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Boat Trader is America's largest boating marketplace with over 100,000 boats to choose from. We offer simple, comprehensive solutions for those looking to sell, find, and finance new or used boats. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
It was just at that moment, I truly felt at peace for the first time in years. And it's something that I look back on, and I realize that the road that I was actually on at that time was a dead end road. And a lot of my brothers that I've known were on that same road. And, we all know the outcome when you hit the dead end. I'm not sure exactly whereabouts on that road I was, but I mean, I was definitely on it, and I knew I was on it. And it was at that moment that I realized that I needed to change. I needed to do something different in my life. And, to summarize that whole experience right then and there was being in the outdoors saved my life. Seeing that doe come walking down that trail, and I just watched her. I didn't even clip in, draw back, nothing. I just watched her. She just walked right in front of me. I mean, she did it perfect. And it was just because of the moment I was in that it forever changed my life. And from that day forward, I needed to get on a different road, which, eventually led me to starting my own nonprofit. But before I even started that nonprofit, I helped out a different one for about 4 years. They weren't from Michigan. They were out of state. And I had a friend of mine that came to me and he said, "Hey, why don't you start your own nonprofit?" And I started laughing. I mean, I got a full-time job, you know, got a one and a half, well, my daughter's two now, but you know, at the time it was like, you know, I have a year and a half year old, and I'm like, dude, I have no time to even think, you know, between, you know, moving into a new house, the house projects, having to try to start a nonprofit. But, you know, I started to think on it a little bit, and you know, I realized that I wasn't getting a lot of support from the community, because people that would invest in what I was trying to do, that money went out of state. And, you know, there's a lot of people that really didn't want to, you know, pitch in a whole lot of money because, you know, it was just going out of state. So when I started this nonprofit, I started to kind of preach to the community and like, hey, you know, your money is helping support all of our local veterans, all of our local first responders to get them into the outdoors. And, you know, I tell people that testimony I had about how it saved my life. And it really changes people, you know, it kind of pulls on their heartstring a little bit. And, you know, a lot of people then started donating money. And then we started getting up, you know, a handful of good sponsors, a lot of great support from the community. And, you know, we closed this year. We took out, I think it was 100 and I got the number written down. I think we took out 140 veterans and first responders for our first year. And that's something that I can take a lot of pride in, because that was a lot of hard work and, you know, time that I put into trying to set up these trips. You know, some were a huge success. I had a couple of deer hunts that we didn't kill a deer, but at the same time, the conversations we had in that deer blind with some of those veterans, you know, I could tell that it helped them out, because a lot of them were struggling with stuff. And, you know, it kind of made me realize that, you know, maybe not every trip is meant to be, you know, us, you know, killing a deer. You know, that's just kind of an added bonus. I mean, that camaraderie, that brotherhood that we all had while we were in the service, and then once getting out, you know, to kind of have someone that's a like-minded individual back into your realm again really, really helped them out. And, you know, afterwards I'm like, "Hey, sorry, you know, we didn't kill a deer." And they're like, "Dude, it's not about that, you know." And then just to see the smile on their face and the firm handshake afterwards, and just the big thank you, like, "You don't understand how bad I needed this." And, you know, I can look right back at them and tell them, like, "Trust me, like, I do know, because, you know, it saved me."
So in that kind of moment of revelation there, when you were in the deer stand and then moving forward to kind of like where you're at now and what you've seen with these veterans, what do you think it is about hunting or archery that really connects with, you know, people that are dealing with some of the things that veterans and first responders, people with, you know, PTSD and that sort of thing? How do you think the two are connected?
Well, for a lot of it, it's providing that platform for them, you know, like waterfowl hunting. Like, I know it's Bowhunter Chronicles, but like, you know, I have the duck boat, I have the decoys, I have the calls and stuff. So literally I can sit there and be like, "Hey, Adam, all you gotta do is bring a shotgun." You know, I'm hoping to be purchasing a shotgun for the nonprofit soon. So, I mean, eventually I can just be like, "You don't need nothing." But duck hunting is really cool, because we can sit there and have those conversations in the boat and, you know, bang up some ducks. It's awesome. But at the end of the day, when you really talk about like archery and how powerful archery is, you know, you get that bow and you get those arrows. And a mutual friend of ours, Chris Hamm, you know, he had on one of his podcasts, he talked about I forgot his first name, but Wooten, it was the very first one. He talked about it, and it's so true. I mean, when you get clipped into that release and you clip into that, you know, a loop on the back of that bow, and you draw that bow back and you focus in on that sight, I mean, there's nothing in that world, in that moment, that can happen that's going to really take you away from that focus. Like, it's an awesome means to an escape, you know, for people to, you know, grab that bow. And you know how I kind of mentioned about how, you know, I wasn't a big fan of gun hunting and how I was getting into archery hunting, because it's not a challenge to me anymore, you know, with a rifle. And to be able to sit there with a bow and actually have to put in all that time, all that effort. I mean, the last 3 years, my knowledge has grown tenfold on just deer hunting in general, because it is so much more rewarding when you sit there, you put the time in, you put the hours in, the scouting, you know, trying to figure out the patterns of these deer, where they're bedding at, you know, and then the rut comes around. I mean, that's most of our favorite time of year. And you go and all of a sudden you see that beautiful buck come walking in and you get that heart race and you can actually connect with that buck or even with that doe. I mean, it is 10 times more rewarding. And that's something that I want to have these veterans and first responders experience. You know, I want to be able to give them those platforms to get out there and show them, like, hey, here's all the tools that you're going to need. And this is something that you can now focus on. You can sit there if you're, you know, come springtime, you're stressed off. I mean, stressed out. You're stressed out. Okay, well, hey, I remember that seminar, because this 2024 season, we're going to be doing a lot of different seminars where we're going to take, you know, men and women out on the state land and show them how to do some scouting, because then it's a tool that they can use. So when you get stressed, you can sit there and go out into the woods where it's peaceful, where it's quiet, and actually put the time in. And all of a sudden, now you're focused in on that. And you're not worried about the stresses going on at work or in your personal life. And when you get home, you know, you can grab that bow and, you know, if you don't got a place to shoot, you can go to a bowman's club or find some state land and get out there and you can clip into that bow. And, you know, you make that one-time investment with the bow and the arrows and you can just constantly keep shooting. And it's very therapeutic. And that's something that I want to provide for, you know, all these veterans, first responders, is that therapeuticness of how it can be. I mean, it's like golf. I mean, you could sit there and, you know, you can drive the ball down the center of the fairway and then you chip it and you slice it, it goes off in the woods, you know, same thing. You can probably send one arrow, like, oh man, I'm dialed in. Then your next arrow was like, you know, you flinch, you jerk the trigger. I mean, there's so many mechanics that go into actually shooting, and it's something that you have to get the repetitions in. And it's not like with a handgun, you know, you go buy a box of ammo, 50 rounds later, okay, now I'll go buy another box of ammo. You know, you go and you buy your dozen arrows and you have them. I mean, you can shoot them as long as you take care of them. You can shoot them thousands and thousands of times, those same 12 arrows. So it's a platform that we really want to try to focus in on moving forward, so that, you know, again, we can just reach out to these veterans and first responders and, you know, hook them up maybe with some bows, hook them up with, you know, the arrows, and show them, like, hey, this is where you can go shooting at, show them how to hunt, just to basically become a mentor for these individuals to give them that escape that they desperately need.
So it sounds like the program is relatively new, and in the first year you've taken, you know, well over 100 individuals out. What is the process for that, and what were some of the, like, learning curves that you had to deal with getting into that? Because that seems like a lot, because we've only got so many days of hunting and all that. That's a lot of guys, a lot of trips.
It is. Now, I did do a big golf outing that we did take out 106 veterans, first responders. We fundraised for that, so we provided them for a free day of golf. So, I mean, like, that was a big event that we took out a big number of people on. So that really kind of got my number up there. But all the other trips, it was, man, if you want to talk about a learning curve, I'll tell you what, every trip I learned a lot on the planning process, because you sit there and it's like, okay, hey, Adam, we're going to plan a deer hunt, you know, a month from now, or two, you know, like 2 months from now. You know, you plan out a trip. I mean, you do a lot of out of state trips. So, I mean, you know what it's like where you plan something like, all right, you know, granted, you guys are planning like a week. I'm planning a day, a weekend. And I have no idea what the weather is going to be like, you know, 3 weeks from now. So on top of me stressing like the week or two leading up to that hunt or that trip, I'm constantly checking the weather, the wind, on top of going out and scouting. And the hard part I had for my first year for especially the deer hunting was we don't have actual property yet. You know, I'm hoping one day to find that random person that has a farm field that they're like, or chunk of property. And they're like, hey, kids don't hunt no more. We don't want it, you know, donate it. Yeah, that'd be great. But I do hope that we can actually get a chunk of property in the future where I do know what the deer are doing. You know, that's the hard part was a lot of people donated their lands for us to actually get out there to use this season. And the first deer hunt I did, the guy's like, yep, there's deer blind here, just go set up, deer come in, food plot, you're all set. I'm like, okay. So we sat there and I had no idea. I'm like, all right, you know, where's their bedding at? I started running through all my scouting stuff. So I put my faith into a person that owned the property and it didn't pan out at all. So then the next trip I did, I mean, I went out, you know, 3 weeks prior, you know, again, you know, checking cameras, checking, you know, trails, you know, I was scouting and I put in a lot of my personal time into, you know, trying to scout for, you know, that one day. And we got out there and it was a blizzard this year. So we're sitting there and like the one day we actually got good snow and ended up just dumping on us. And those deer, they harbored up and they didn't move until the last 30 minutes of light. And they came a totally different direction than I thought. So, I mean, the planning process was kind of easy. It's like, hey, we're going to go deer hunt on, you know, November 15th, opening day. All right, cool. Got it. And we're going to go hunt here. But, you know, it's the scouting that you have to put in because I want to make sure every experience that they go on is a good one. And, you know, I sit here and I fundraise for a reason. You know, I'm not going to take these veterans first responders to McDonald's, you know, to go grab lunch. Like we're going to go to like a nice restaurant somewhere. We're going to put you up in a Holiday Inn at the time, because I want to make sure that even if the hunting trip wasn't a total success, you know, where they slept at, with the food they ate, you know, the camaraderie that they had, that, you know, it's a good experience for them. So, I mean, there's, even as we talk now, I'm thinking of, you know, future trips I got coming up and the stuff that I still got to do. You know, my wife's been an absolute blessing in my life because she is very computer savvy and she has super OCD with like organization. So she has spreadsheets, Excel files, Word documents. I mean, we have so many different templates. Like I got a new template now. So if everyone decides they want to do something like this in the future, my wife created a template for me where I would sit down and bring my computer and on the trip, I would type notes on, you know, because after these trips are done, we got to do a social media post. So I'm in there typing up, you know, what the weather was like and stuff, you know, where we slept, where we ate, you know, did we like this location? Just all these key notes so that in the future, when I go to plan again, if I'm in the same area, you know, I kind of know the do's and don'ts of, you know, for that particular area, that particular style of trip that we're trying to do.
So how many, we haven't really got into the organization that much. So how many people are involved in this? Is it a one man show or, you know, because it seems like if it is a one man show, that's a huge, undertaking. You know, a couple more guys would really kind of make it a little bit easier.
Yeah. So I have my board. So I have a board, you know, we got a nonprofit. So we have a board and, the president on my board, he's a close friend of mine and he was, Army Special Operations. And he actually kind of helped me and guided me to pick the rest of our board members. And every board member was a strategic pick. And that was the thing, is we didn't want to have a lot of my friends on the board, which the board members are now all my friends, but originally I didn't want that because then you have, you know, kind of personal, you know, interest at play with stuff. So I have a strong board, but besides my wife that handles all of our social media emails, she's a graphic designer. So all of our logos, like she designs all that stuff. So she takes a lot of that stuff off of my plate, but it's a one man show right now. I've been very blessed so far that I've been able to get, drinking a Verner's. So there it is. been very blessed that, been making a lot of great connections, and it's just crazy how some of them span, a mutual friend of ours too, Shane Browning. He's becoming a close friend of mine, and he's one that we're going to, put on a couple different, seminars and clinics, with in the Bay City Bowman's Club. We're going to go out there and set up some shoots and stuff. And, he's starting to kind of step up to help out a little bit with a lot of that kind of planning stuff, giving me some good ideas. But, it is a lot for me to do by myself. Like I said, I still got the support of my board. They still send me referrals. Hey, call this person. Hey, here's a great idea. Here's something that you should look into. But they're not the ones that are going to sit there and make that phone call to that corporation to get that check to get donated to us. They're like, hey, here's a guy, call and talk to him. Be like, we're not going to do it for you. This is your organization. If you want this to succeed, you got to start proving it to us or showing us like how bad you want it. And ultimately that's what it's been. I mean, it's been a very hard grind for us and for me personally, mentally and physically, trying to do everything. Again, I'm still trying to look into trying to get some, I'm hoping to get some brand ambassadors in the near future that can, take that burden off of my plate on these trips. But, a big thing is with these trips, I do go on, these trips, but it's the experience that I've had. It's a story that I've had that, I can relate to, these veterans and first responders that, some people just, they can't do that. And that's kind of why my board wants me going on a lot of these trips, because they want me to be the one that connects with these individuals on that personal level. I got a quick story. I could be here for hours telling a whole bunch of them, but just a testimony. It wasn't with my nonprofit. It was the one that I was helping, but it was a deer hunt. And again, I was talking about the stupid weather. We got out there, and I mean, it was like a monsoon. And I told him the day prior, I'm like, hey, man, I was trying to get him all excited about the trip. And I'm like, hey, ultimately I'm tell you, like, I don't think we're going to see anything. Like, I mean, it is going to rain. And he's like, I haven't been deer hunting in a very long time. It would be nice just to be out in the woods. I'm like, all right, man, let's go. And I took him out there, and I mean, it was, when I said a monsoon, I mean, it was pouring rain, and we had a ton of wind. And in the back of my head, I'm like, man, I should have grabbed a shotgun. I'm like, dude, let's go jump in my duck boat. But, we sat in that blind and we had some good conversations, and there was a couple that got real, real dark and personal. And after one of the conversations we had, he reached in his pocket and he handed me something, and he had in between his, index finger and his thumb was a 9mm bullet. And he's like, hey, I want you to have this. And of course I'm kind of puzzled because, we're sitting there, bow hunting, and he hands me a bullet, and he's like, I don't think you understand what this bullet is. And, me getting choked up at the time, I said, kind of like I am right now. I'm like, dude, I do, because that bullet was meant for him.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from.
Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
He told me that 2 weeks prior to that trip, he was ready to take his life. And I kept reaching out to him like, hey, man, you know, I'm trying to get him like excited about this upcoming trip. And he told himself that like he was going to go on this trip. And it's kind of sad when I say this now, but he's like, he's going to base, you know, his decision off of this trip. And I'm like, you know, I didn't realize at the time, but like looking back, I'm like, we didn't see a deer, we didn't kill anything, but it was that conversation, that camaraderie that we were able to develop in that deer blind that ultimately, you know, that saved his life. And, you know, that's kind of what it comes down to. You know, not every trip is going to be a success, but, you know, I look back at that. I look back on a couple of those other deer hunts I've had and some of the other fishing trips we've done that weren't a big success, but to see like the smiles on their faces and to kind of tell like that trip made a difference to them. And, you know, that's kind of what it all comes down to. You know, it's not just, you know, all the planning, the hours spent. It's trying to see if you can develop that connection, that relationship with that individual, and see if they are struggling. You know, our number one, you know, clients we want are, you know, men and women with PTSD. And, you know, you can't always tell if someone has it or not, but, you know, at the end of the day, like they're the ones we want. We want the ones that have that stress and that want to find that escape, and we want to be able to provide it for them.
And so for people out there that are listening who either are suffering with PTSD and they're kind of in this situation, or people who are listening and they say, you know, this might be a good thing for a family member or a friend of mine, you know, what is your process as far as like choosing people for these trips, getting people involved? Because, you know, anytime that you do anything, I'm assuming that there's probably some serious amount of vetting, you know, to a degree, but at the same time, there's going to be people that are trying to, you know, take advantage of mm-hmm. anything, right?
Yeah. So we actually, my last board meeting this month, I created a policy that we'll be posting on our website coming up here the first part of January. And it's kind of our vetting process and how we actually go through and select people for it. So it'll be open to the public. So it's not just, you know, hey, I'm going to take Adam because he's my buddy. You know, it's, you know, we do have a process now that we are selecting people. But, I mean, ultimately, like people that are struggling, like they're always going to be our number ones that we want to try to take out to help. But at the same time, you know, as long as you honorably served our country, you know, apply for these trips. You know, the same thing for first responders. You know, you don't have to be, you know, a combat vet to go on our trips. You don't have to be, you know, a seasoned, you know, first responder. I mean, everyone has everyday stresses, and that's what we want to try to eliminate. We post stuff on our website, and we'll do links on our Facebook page too. Those are pretty active. So if people want to go onto our website, outdoordriven.org, we got upcoming events. We have nothing coming up right now. We're just closing out this year, so don't click on it yet. But so we have kind of a criteria, you know, we'll post, and it's the thing is we want to try to keep like veterans with veterans, first responders with first responders. You know, we will do a trip for law enforcement, firefighter, paramedic, EMS. Like we try to keep them together. The same thing with veterans, because, you know, conversations that you and I can have together are going to be different than a conversation I'm going to have with, you know, a paramedic. So we try to keep like-minded people together too with that. And, you know, it all depends on what the trip is, but, you know, everyone can apply for the trip as long as it's, you know, posted for, hey, this trip is for veterans only, then a veteran or active duty service member will be the one that's going to go on that trip.
Awesome. Now, I guess, you know, you've given an example of a hunt that was, you know, probably more meaningful than any harvest or anything like that. But can you share like any like success stories or anything that really stands out as a cool hunt that you did that was successful?
Unfortunately, deer hunting, not this year for us, but I can tell you this, I have some big big plans in the works right now. I actually reached out to a couple different high fence ranches. I'm going to keep them on the down low right now, but I've been emailing back and forth one. I'm going to be able to go out and do some scouting. And what I told the guy is that I really want to make that an archery hunt. You know, when I was talking about how I really want to dive into heavy with archery, you know, that's what I really want to do. But we've had a couple of really great successful waterfowl hunts. I'm sure you know as well as I know, in Michigan, the weather's been atrocious for deer hunting. Warm weather, I mean, it's been rough. But a trip that I did that was a big success was we did a sturgeon fishing trip. And we took out some Gold Star family members, and we took them out sturgeon fishing. And, you know, this one guy was battling this sturgeon for about, I'd say, 27 minutes almost. And when that fish finally got in the boat, I mean, this guy, I mean, I don't think you could have made him smile any bigger than when he had that fish in that boat. I mean, it was that right there was probably my favorite trip I did, was watching, you know, those Gold Star family members all hook into a dinosaur. I mean, that's a fish of a lifetime for a lot of people. So that was really cool to see that. But like I said, 2024, you know, I would hoping our friendship can keep growing, and, you know, we can try to do another one of these next year. And, you know, I can talk about some big things that, you know, I had planned that actually did work out, that, you know, that is in this lane of, you know, the bow hunting and trying to get out there after some nice deer.
Oh yeah. You know, for us, the bow hunting is, you know, our passion for a lot of the reasons that you outlined there. And, you know, probably almost your come to Jesus moment there, by, you know, for anyone who hasn't, been in that situation with deer underneath your tree stand or whatever, there is just a completely different feeling with archery equipment, you know, and that's what we go for. But ultimately, the farther this thing gets down the road, it's about community, and you know, many things like you said about, you know, the veterans and the shared experiences and all of that, and that's what we love about it. So it doesn't always have to be, despite what some people may I don't know what idealize about the whole thing, is it doesn't always have to be bow hunting all the time. If we're, you know, if we're making a difference, then that's all we can really hope for. Right. So
exactly
for what you're doing there, what, you know, I would hope that if people are this far into the podcast and they're listening, you know, we've opened some eyes, and maybe people are thinking about, like, what could we do to help, or how could we, you know, assist Andrew in this, or, you know, if we wanted to donate, or what kind of things do you need? That sort of thing. So from that side of it, if somebody wanted to donate, if someone had a lease that they, you know, leased out every year, and they're like, you know what, I'd like to donate my lease or something, you know, I'd like to offer my lease to them, you know, or equipment or anything like that. Where are you guys at with that? Because, you know, I'm on the board for our Bowman's Club. We're doing a dinner right now, and in the planning stages, and we're talking about, like, what do you take for donations? Well, if someone just grabs a whole bunch of dusty stuff out of their basement, that's the equipment that you outlined from that yard sale. Like, the gesture's there, but it maybe doesn't necessarily meet the mark that we're kind of striving for. So how do you deal with that kind of stuff? And where are you looking for help?
So obviously, I always start with the big one. I mean, these nonprofits don't run off of my good looks and my long-winded answers that I've been giving you. It comes down to funding. I mean, you know, we do need to always get funding. I'm learning how to, you know, do grants right now and stuff, but, you know, to sit there and find, like, that random check that shows up, you know, for whether it's $100 or, you know, $1,000. I mean, all that money helps us out with our mission. So, I mean, the first thing is always going to be money, but You know, the second thing is, like you mentioned, about, you know, land, property. You know, that's something that I want. Like I said in towards the beginning of the podcast, I would love to be able to find a place to call home. I mean, we're out of Bay City, Michigan right now, but I would love to sit there and, you know, have a chunk of property that we can call home, that I can actually build a lodge on and have people come to this lodge. So you got that community aspect there. You got that camaraderie. You got that escape that they can come to and then go out on our property and go hunt. But besides that, I mean, like you said, if someone just has a lease, if they want to, you know, donate the lease, it doesn't have to be for the full season. If people are like, hey, I got a spot here. I'd love you guys to come out and, you know, come kill a deer. Block permits are a huge one. I mean, farmers, I mean, if there's any farmers that listen, I had a guy that he said next year he's going to donate 20 block permits to us if he gets them again for, you know, to go out there for does. And I'm like, yeah, let's go. I can fill every one of those. I mean, I got people that never killed deer before. I'll get them out. But equipment, you know, ideally I would love to sit there and say like brand new in the box, but I mean, if someone has like a used bow, but it's, you know, it's a nice bow, it's in good condition, all decked out with everything, like, here you go. All you have to do is just get it tuned up and give it to a veteran. I mean, I will never say no to something that's used, that's in good condition, that can actually get repurposed. But like, you know, you're saying, I had some people like, hey, I got some decoys, like, you know, like handing me a bag of decoys, and you know, the gesture was there, but I mean, these things had like no paint left on them. I mean, a few of them were shot up. I'm like, hey, thanks, man. You know, you know, the kind of the same concept, but like, you know, tree stands, rifle blinds, you know, all that stuff can go to good use at some point, you know. So, you know, like I said, you know, money, trying to find land, and then, you know, actually nice, good equipment that's serviceable that we can, you know, utilize and give away to someone that's going to be safe. You know, safety is going to be a huge factor with all that stuff too.
So in all of this, you know, between work, nonprofit, and, you know, that thing we take for granted, you know, spending time with family and everything. Did you get a chance to hunt at all this year for yourself? Have you been able to go out and have any success?
So, I put all my eggs in one basket. I went out to Kansas and I shot a trophy out there. So I was able to get out for 4 days of hunting out there, but actually this Friday is gonna be my first time going out this season for myself for deer hunting. I really didn't have a lot of time. I mean, my wife is she's pregnant right now. You know, we're due in March, so between trying to take care of a 2-year-old and doing all these trips, you know, I really didn't have a lot of personal time for myself to actually, you know, get out there. But you know, I still look at, you know, excuse me, you know, looking at, hey, even though I did 13 different trips this year and I didn't once get out for myself for fishing or deer hunting yet, you know, it was a huge success and I, you know, I loved it. But well, I'm pretty excited about this Friday though. You know, hopefully the weather can hold out and I can get out there, but it's still going to be great to be able to clip in and hang from my saddle and just be out there in God's country and the peace and quiet and to have my bow out there and hopefully have the opportunity to, you know, send an arrow.
So I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, because you're not the first scout sniper that we've had on here, to ask you what from that training do you think transitions the best or like has helped you the most in, whether it's, you know, map reading, scouting, thermals, any of that stuff. I mean, you know, wind currents at 1,000 meters are different.
Man, that would make my scouting a million times easier. A lot of it, you know, when it comes down to like the stalking part of it, that was huge. The ability, like you said, map. I mean, you know, Hey, Onyx, I use Onyx, you know, but not sponsored by them. Gotta throw that out there. But to sit there, I can look at a map and get on there and actually try to look at, you know, just the terrain and just seeing what the terrain's like and kind of have a game plan. And, you know, there's some of my most successful hunts I've had so far in the last 2-3 years have been in areas I've never been to, where I was forced to get out there and put boots on the ground and actually scout. I mean, that buck that I killed in Kansas, you know, this guy, he's got permission to hunt 2,100 acres spread out all, like, over like a couple different counties. So I'm like, okay, so you probably scouted a lot of this. He's like, not really. I'm like, oh God. So, you know, I jumped on there. I was looking at the wind, seeing, you know, here's some fields. So a lot of that kind of tied into it. And like I said about the stalking, I mean, that buck, I had him on the ground and I stalked up to a point where I thought he was going to come out at. And lo and behold, he did. And, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that I didn't, you know, get down and actually stalk around a little bit and, you know, try to read the map, look at the train, trying to figure out which way he's going to come, I don't think I would have had a chance to kill him. So, you know, those are the kind of the two biggest ones there. And, you know, obviously, you know, go without saying, I mean, you put a rifle in my hands, like, yeah, okay, you know, between me and, well, right now it's shot in a while, but, you know, 800 yards, like, I would feel totally confident shooting at, you know, 800 to 1,000 yards with my rifle at a deer, knowing, because I understand the ballistics of that round. I know what it's going to do as long as I can read the good wind. But, you know, that's, like I said, that last one kind of goes without saying. I mean, it's, you know, being a sniper, you know, I'm pretty good with a rifle, but, you know, a lot of people like think like, oh, all you do is shoot. Like, no, it's about, you know, 74-76% of our job was the scouting and the, you know, reconnaissance surveillance aspect of it. And my patience, that right there, ultimately, I think is a huge one that did tie in. I mean, I know a lot of people in the military could probably say that about having patience, because you can sit there and get fidgety and antsy, but, you know, as long as you can have the willpower to, you know, hold out in that, you know, that cold, the wind, the rain and stuff, I mean, good things can happen.
And then, so what bow are you shooting this year? So what's your bows, arrows, broadheads, all that stuff?
So, I can't remember so I got a Prime and I absolutely love it. I want to get one of those new ones, but, I got a Prime. Actually, I just got switched over to Kanadi arrows and with a Zinger fletching. So I got those on. And I'm in the process of actually switching broadheads. But this year, I currently have on my bow is the Afflictor broadheads. I watched Red Arrow. The guy went down there and he shot a boar right in the shoulder, grabbed that same arrow, put it back in his bow, and then ended up killing a doe with it. And it had pass-throughs on both times. I'm like, That's the broadhead for me. And trying to think of what I think I got a Scott's release. Can't remember which model it was, but I bought it. I was down in Colorado, went on an elk hunt, self-guided elk hunt with a buddy of mine, and ended up shooting my eyes is a trophy, but a small 5x5 with my bow. But that's why I'm so hesitant to ever get rid of that bow, because with the cams on it, once I hit that back wall, I can just hold it. And I actually have it on my GoPro. I held that bow at full draw for a minute and 32 seconds before I was able to, you know, release the arrow on that bull elk. And, you know, so I'm it's so hard for me to probably get rid of that bow because of the personal connection I have with it. But those are the tools of the trade that I got. And right now I'm sitting in trophy line tree saddle, but if anyone from
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping MidwayUSA.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Latitude Outdoors is listening. Michigan brand. I'm trying to get a hold of you, so I'd like to work with you guys.
I might know somebody over there.
Yeah.
So, does Chris got you in a HHA site yet, or is it in the mail?
Oh yeah, I got a HHA single pin site, and actually with Shane this week, we're gonna get together and we're gonna try to get it all sited in. I currently have a 5-pin. I think it's a Tropia Ridge that's on it right now, but I've always wanted to get a single pin. But yeah, Chris with HJ Sports, he hooked it up, and I got a single pin right now. And you know, we've had these I don't think we had this conversation yet about, you know, the pros and cons with a single pin versus having multi pin, and you know, which one you would rather use or not.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, since we went to, like in 2018, when we planned out everything for our first elk hunt out there, we went to multi-pin sliders. And, you know, so on one of my bows, I have a HHA. I have their, I want to say it's like their kingpin, 5-pin slider. And so that goes 20, 30, 40. And then my bottom pin is like 65 or something. Maybe it's 4-pin. I don't know. But it goes 20, 30, 40. And then my bottom one, I think, is 55. And I can shoot out to like 110 with that. But that way I know, you know, where it's at. And then if that animal were to come running in, you know, you shoot him, or you're set up for 20 or for 30, and then he comes closer or whatever, you can do that where you're not dialing around. I mean, I had another kingpin light that was just a single pin. And actually I shot that little buck right there, in 2018 with my brothers. That was the first year that we all killed on the same day, with archery equipment, which may never happen again. But I missed a buck that was about as big as that one. Earlier in the morning, where I ranged him at like 42, set my pin at 40, got to full draw, and then he kept coming and coming and coming, and I shot right over top of him. I mm-hmm. cut some hair right off his back. And that didn't deter me from using that sight. And I mean, I know exactly what happened, and you know, but in the moment. And so that's what you're dealing with a single pin. And it can get really tricky using a multi-pin, because with that 20, 30, 40, and then 55 being that sight, that bottom pin bottomed out, where it is, like I have to dial that sight using my bottom pin as the slider. When it's set up at 20, 30, 40, it's 56. I have to set my tape at 56. So at 56, it's correct. And then when I dial down, the bottom pin is the slider, just like it is, would be like a single pin.
Okay.
And that gets confusing, because if like we set that up for my brother-in-law on my old bow, he's got one of my old bows, and he missed a really nice buck at 35 because he dialed the sight to 35 and put the top pin on it instead of putting it at 40 and just shooting them with the bottom pin or the 20, 30, 40 pin. So it can get confusing both ways. So it can happen. It's just, you just have to, just like anything else, you just have to know your equipment and use it and practice. So,
yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, because, you know, it's like people always say it's like riding a bicycle. I mean, you know, I had elbow surgery back in towards the end of September, which kind of ruined the beginning part of me trying to get out deer hunting. But, you know, I'm like, oh, it's like riding a bike. You know, I went out and I started flinging a few arrows, and I'm like, all right, cool. You know, I got it dialed back in. But it's the repetition that I didn't have, and the confidence wasn't there. Like when I had that buck that I killed, I had him on the ground at 40 yards and he was facing straight towards me, and I would have had to have threaded through an opening in a cedar tree. And I'm like, there ain't no way. Like, I didn't have the reps in, and that was kind of a humbling moment for me, because like you said, you got to know your equipment. And I knew I could not make that shot happen. And that's what is leading me towards, I need to start practicing more, which is really nice, because now it's giving me a great excuse to actually go get a membership at the Bowman's Club. So this wintertime I can actually get out there and, you know, shoot my bow more, because, you know, the same thing with being a sniper. I mean, you can sit there, I can throw you on any rifle, and as long as I can read good wind and get the good range on you, you just got to pull the trigger. I mean, yeah, it's little small fundamentals that in between, but it's that repetition with actually, you know, understanding the wind, reading the wind. It's the same thing with deer hunting. I mean, you know, I understand that the arrow's velocity is a lot slower, and I actually 2 years ago, I missed a nice 10 point with my bow because I ranged him and I didn't really process, because when he was walking towards me, he was at 15 yards. So I'm like, oh, dude, that's a chip shot. Like, I got this. And I shot right over his back. But because of how close he was to me and how high I was in the angle, like, that really threw the trajectory of my arrow off, on top of me basically being in like this weird position because I was kind of almost being gangster. Like, I had my bow cocked almost on a total 45 degree angle down, because that was the only opening I had at him. But I've had a couple humbling moments that made me really realize that you really need to just get those reps in practice. And yeah, I figured if I can try to, I don't know about master, but if I can just get that single pin on and just try it out and just see, and then that way I know firsthand whether or not that's for me or not, if I want to switch back to having a multi pin.
Yeah, you won't have any issues. It's just, and to be honest with you, for everything except hunting, the single pin is king. Like, for all the target shooting, because it builds so much confidence. So like, if your tape is right and you're like at your Bowman's Club, like our Bowman's Club, you can shoot. I mean, if you shoot from the parking lot, you can shoot to infinity basically, but you know, farther than your bow can handle.
Mm-hmm.
But our range goes from like 10 to 80 or 90, something like that. So you just go up to any one of those, hit your range finder, 70. Okay. Dial it to 70, follow your process and put it in there at 70. I mean, when you're, you know, like this year prior to TAC, like Frank was dropping, you know, and my father-in-law, he's notoriously, Kentucky windage type shooter. Like, that ought to do it, you know? And when he's dropping, you know, sub paper plate groups at 70, you're like, oh man, Frank, you're doing really good. You know, a 6-inch group at 70, you know, the bow's on, the tape's on, like, there's no excuses. And that's really confidence building. I mean, it's great. But hunting, you know, when that deer's at 43 and then he's at 30, and then, you know, so that's what we didn't want to happen with elk. So that's why we went with a multi-pin slider, and just understanding it. But you're going to like it, like I said, for everything other than hunting. And in 90% of hunting situations, you know, you're going to be shooting at deer inside of 30. So if you have your pin just set at 25, it's the same as when you were a kid and you had those three pins, or you had that one 20-yard pin and you're like, I got to aim a little higher, I got to aim a little lower, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and it's just like your hold for the wind or whatever, you know, with the rifle shooting. So, but yeah, so for anybody, like I say, as we wrap this up here, that wants to reach out, either, you know, to say, you know, to maybe they have a similar story to yours or something like that. If they want to reach out, you know, about their journey, about, you know, the nonprofit, about any ways to help, like, what's the best place to get a hold of you or to reach the nonprofit?
So, on our Facebook page and on our website, and the same thing on Instagram too. I mean, if you send a message to any of those on the website, we do have an email that's posted there. We reply fast. I mean, I can be sitting here and having a conversation with you and stuff will pop on my phone. So, I mean, I got my phone with me all the time, especially now that I have a nonprofit. I mean, I never used to answer random phone calls, but I always answer them now because I never know who's calling. But, you know, we got email is, you know, we usually get back within a couple hours or if not, like, you know, within a day. So those are the best ways to try to reach out to us. You know, it's through Facebook Messenger, the email that's on our website. And, or if you just wanted to look up me on Facebook personally and send me a message, you know, I got, you know, I'll reply back to that too.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time tonight and, you know, for actually for everything that you're doing really, because this isn't like a podcast about like, this is Andrew. This is how he's going to help you, learn to hunt better, necessarily, but you know, he may be able to save somebody in your family or help you out. So, you know, thank you for that.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for this. This is an amazing platform to be on. You know, I listen to you guys all the time. You know, again, that's where I get a lot of my knowledge from is listening to you guys on other podcasts. And I just hope that, you know, if someone's listening, that they understand that, you know, if it's you or if you know someone, that they're not alone. I mean, there's thousands of people out there like myself that are trying to help out. And all you gotta do is just take that one step and just reach out. And that's usually the hardest thing. I mean, you know, big macho guys like, oh, I'll keep it tucked up inside. And then you keep it tucked up until, you know, you hit that breaking point. But, you know, even if you have someone that you know that, you know, is just struggling and they won't reach out on their own, you know, if you're comfortable, give them my contact information or give me theirs. I'll reach out to them personally and, you know, we can do stuff together that doesn't have to be, you know, all of our social media. You know, people just need to understand that our mission is just to help. So, you know, just have people just reach out ultimately. That's what we need.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Adam. Have a great one.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Spend your Saturdays with life on the water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow.
Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.